website at DunnettInc.com or give them a call at 947-4572. Dunnett has done it again.
I've been drifting on the sea of heartbreak, trying to get myself ashore for so long. So long.
Back here on Downtown, 20 minutes after 5 o'clock. On your Monday afternoon, Monday Night Football tonight. Lions play host to the Raiders. Boston Bruins skate against the Florida Panthers at the Garden tonight. Bees putting their 7-0-1 record on the line. Boston Celtics trying to go to 3-0 on the young season are on the road in Washington, where they will play the Wizards tonight. World Series, game number 3 in Arizona as the Diamondbacks, there we go, play host to the Texas Rangers. That series all tied up at one win apiece. And Maine native Cooper Flagg, the nation's number one college basketball prospect, made it official today. He will be headed to Duke for one season of glory, maybe more, but probably just one. That announcement coming earlier today. Sports headlines on Downtown are brought to you by Tiller and Rye. Located at 20 South Main Street in Brewer, they stock items from over 300 Maine vendors, everyday essentials from food and household products to personal care items. The area's freshest produce, hormone-free meats, artisan cheeses, bulk grains and spices, area coffee, beer and wine, and a great lunch selection, too, in their grab-and-go section. Follow them on Facebook and Instagram for updates and store happenings. Tiller and Rye, recently named by the Bangor Region Chamber of Commerce as Small Business of the Year. They're your local grocer, located at 20 South Main Street in Brewer.
In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Yeah, you better believe it. Alan Adams right here in studio with us. Happy Monday to you, Mr. Adams.
And to you as well, sir.
Nice to see you again, although you look different than the last time I saw you.
I could say the same to you.
The last time we saw each other was at that Penobscot Theater Gala on Saturday night, and you and Sheridan resplendent as the Big Bad Wolfman Jack.
And Little Big Red Riding Hood.
Little Big Red Riding Hood. It was fabulous.
Yeah, we had a wonderful time. That was a great event. Like I really had a great time.
I had no idea what to expect, and we got there early, and okay, there were only a few people there, and then man, that place was packed and rocking.
Yeah, it really filled up. It was you're always a little hesitant when you're doing something new. Mm. Like you don't know exactly how people are going to react to it, but I mean, the general consensus seemed to be that it was a pretty successful event.
Yeah.
I know we had a great time.
Yeah, we did too. It was awesome. And we were just talking to Barry Newport, and I was thinking about this, and it obviously applies to you as well. But yeah, we talk about the 50-year history of Penobscot Theater, and we have talked to Ken Stack, Mark Torres, Scott Levy, Barry Newport. We have covered the 50-year history, and you and I have only been associated for about 25 years there, but we know all these.
Yeah,
people.
we've worked with all these people. Yeah. it's pretty remarkable. This has been a really great sort of series. So hats off to you, Rich, for putting all this together.
Oh well, it's been so much fun.
But it is a remarkable achievement for any organization to last that long, and for everyone who has steered the ship or whatever, to a person, they all just have such fondness for their time here, And I think that speaks to the quality of the organization, but I think it speaks to the quality of the community as well, And I mean, and Barry alluded to that. Like I listened to some of the interview on the way over here, and she alluded to that, and everyone else like has also sort of, addressed how the city, the region was a real significant part of their experience, like in a positive one.
And I feel like every one of them through the years have all played their own individual part in terms of getting the theater to where it is, whether it's in terms of investments and sponsorships, endowments, buildings, improvements, adding new buildings to what they do, the artistic content that has changed and grown through the course of the years. And everybody played a pretty strong role in that. It's not that you can look and go, well, you know, that tenure didn't amount for much.
Well, I mean, I think it's also, I think it's impressive when you stop and think about, you talk about tenures, it's not like it was, there were any one and dones here. Everybody was here for a significant amount of time. And, you know, when you have that time and, you know, you have that investment, you're invested personally in the company, and the community in turn is invested in you. Well, then that's when the big stuff happens.
Yeah.
Like that's when you know you can make those big steps, and really it's just a series of big steps. And you know, like with any organization, there have been obstacles and speed bumps along the way. Like that's the nature of the beast,
sure.
Particularly when you're talking about the arts. But I think it's safe to say that every single one of these artistic directors has left Penobscot Theatre Company in a better place than when they found it.
Yep.
And when you keep improving, it's just you know who wins? The community.
Yeah, there you go. By the way, Alan, a happy anniversary to you. I can't believe 5 years ago tonight, this is the anniversary of the airing, right?
Yes.
So 5 years ago tonight, we were all gathered up at OBC in Orono to cheer you on as you went on Jeopardy.
Yep, that's right. 5 years. The term in the Jeopardy community is airiversary.
Ah, okay.
So yes. So today, October 30th, marks my 5 year airiversary. It was October 30th, 2018, when the episode aired, and everyone got to spend that precious minute or so between the end of Double Jeopardy and Final Jeopardy. Did Alan win? He's going to win, isn't he? He's going to win. No, he's not. He's not going to win.
But you played so well. And somebody posted it on social media today, and I completely agreed. I had more fun that night cheering for you as you were kicking butt and taking names than I have, I think, at any athletic event.
Well, I appreciate that very much. Thank you. It's one of those things. It's always going to be a very fond memory. I posted a couple of things on social media, my Trebek picture, obviously. Our friend Eric Roy actually took a picture of the end of Double Jeopardy on his television. And so it's like, and then, you know, as I said, it's like, oh, this is the beginning of the very brief stretch where I thought I was going to win. And then in the comments, I posted one of the promotional videos that they had us take.
That was great.
Dorky as all heck. In what I thought was a very nice thing. I am Facebook friends with Emily Frey. She's since been married, but who was the woman who defeated me? And she was very gracious. she earned the win, and she said, you know what, with that tie, you deserve the win.
But also too, with the new advanced metrics that they look at when they analyze Jeopardy episodes, I mean, you had a crazy high score because of the number of correct answers that you gave that
night.
It's
true. It's called like a Coriat score,
I think. Yeah.
It's basically, rewarded for, for correct answers and high value answers, with points removed for wrong answers. But the reality is I did not have any problems with the signaling button as many do. So, but yeah, it's just, it's an opportunity to take a look back and just, remember, a really lovely time. And again, as you mentioned, that was kind of the first like real event that was hosted at the OBC location. Like they had just opened the doors, maybe a week prior. Abe and Heather were so great. Like we had alluded to the fact that we were looking for a place to watch it, and they were like, well, why don't you just do it here? I was like, well, it's kind of big, isn't it? And then it was just like shoulder to shoulder. It was one of those things where I walked in the door and was convinced that there was some other event happening because like, why are all these people here? It was a lovely time, a lovely memory, and it's something that I will cherish forever.
And you and Sheridan were so good keeping the secret.
Oh, I tell you, yeah, it's I didn't tell my friends, like I didn't tell my sister. The only person I told was my mother. I told my mom, and my buddy Nick knew because he was living in Sacramento at the time, and so he came and sat in on the filming. So he was in the audience when it happened. So he knew what was what. But he also he kept it on lockdown. He did a good job.
Well, it was a great time. So happy anniversary.
Well, thank you very much.
Alan Adams with us here on Downtown. Any movies to talk about this week?
Yeah, I got a couple. There's one very, very good drama. I guess you'd call it a docudrama on Netflix called Pain Hustlers.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've heard about this.
Got a great cast. Really sort of timely subject matter. That's very good. And I did not go to the theater to watch it, as many people did, but I did see Five Nights at Freddy's.
Okay, I have not heard about that.
It's based on a video game that is essentially a horror version of being trapped in basically a Chuck E. Cheese.
Whoa!
Where they're coming after you. A very popular video game. The movie. They did a day and date release, so it's both in theaters and on streaming on Paramount Plus. I watched it streaming, but it did a shocking amount of box office this weekend. I think I want to say $78 million at the box office.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know, I think it benefited from being like the only sort of like spooky new release to come out on that Halloween weekend. And, you know, it is an IP that is familiar to a certain demographic. And it's the kind of movie, I think, that lends itself well to, groups of 14-year-olds going.
Right.
Because it's... because,
holding each other's hands and screaming. Yeah.
Well, they made a very conscious effort to keep it as a PG-13 film. And so you were able to sort of court those younger audiences who apparently turned out in droves. Because, again, like... Man, I mean that kind of money for a movie that people could watch at home.
Yeah,
like it's really very impressive. But yeah, which one do you want to talk about?
Well, while we're there, let's talk about that one.
Great. So Five Nights at Freddy's is a video game series. The first one came out, I believe, in 2014. The basic gist is for the video game, like you're the night watchman at a decrepit, you know, abandoned. Family theme restaurant that is definitely not Chuck E. Cheese, wink, wink. But you have a lot of animatronic animals that play music and sing, except at night. Well, they come to life, Rich.
I want that.
but in the movie, what we've got is a young man named Mike, played by Josh Hutcherson. He's looking after his younger sister after their parents have gone. He's got a very tragic sort of backstory wherein when he himself was a kid, his younger brother was abducted and they never found out what happened. So he's been carrying that trauma with him and struggling with it to the point where there are folks, other folks in the extended family who would prefer it if the younger sister... Anna would no longer live with Mike. He struggles to hold down a job, difficulties with his temper, et cetera, et cetera. But then he finally stumbles onto this job at an employment agency, and they're like, okay, well, we need someone to basically work overnights, making sure nobody breaks into this abandoned family restaurant. But it's very clear very quickly that. Stuff's going on. And we get to watch as our man Mike deals with they're terrifying animatronic things that apparently have consciousnesses of their own. Consciousness that is there are some pretty significant reveals throughout the course of the movie that I'm not going to go into too much. I'm sure people who have played the video games, I'm not familiar, but I'm sure that there are folks out there who already know how it goes, but I'm not going to be the one to spoil it for you. It was I wasn't sure what I was getting into because on the one hand it's like, well this sounds dumb. and then on the other hand it's like you actually see them like moving on screen and you're like, oh, this is dumb and terrifying. because it's remarkable how much how much a talented filmmaker can turn these sorts of like, you know, herky jerky, like blinky eyed things into figures of menace.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of points where folks come out on the wrong end of the titular Freddy, Freddy Fazbear is the it's Freddy Fazbear Pizza, like that's the name of the restaurant. But our man,
somehow that makes it even more scary, doesn't
right?
it?
Yeah, you know, it's just like they sing 80s songs and they blink weird and then occasionally somebody dies in a horrifying and gruesome way. But it's a pretty solid watch, all things considered. The casting is good. If you're a fan of horror movies, this one's good because it is scary. There are a couple of decent jump scares, but it's never gory. Like there are a couple of parts where you can see where it could have been, and they clearly made a concerted effort because again, like you can't have buckets of blood and get that PG-13 rating.
Right.
So like I think they made a lot of really really smart choices as far as putting this together, and I mean, I think there are like a bunch of video games, like there are some novelizations, like it's a significant IP empire, which again, not for me,
right.
I'm clearly past the point where I would know anything about this, but it is apparently staggeringly popular, and if this movie is any indication, like you don't open $80 million, you don't open $80 million and not make another one,
right?
And the team behind the scenes, like this is a Blumhouse joint, so Jason Blum, like he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
So I would not be at all surprised if, put it this way, if they didn't already have a sequel in the works, it's in the works now.
Nice. Well, cool. All right. What about Pain Hustlers?
You know, this movie was really good. Like, not that it should surprise you when you hear some of the names involved. Like, David Yates directed. It's based on a book from just a couple of years ago of the same name by Evan Hughes. But yeah, it stars Emily Blunt, Chris Evans, Andy Garcia, Catherine O'Hara, Jay Duplass is in this, Brian D'Arcy James. Like, it's just this really wonderful cast telling a really compelling story, based on a true story.
Hmm.
Emily Blunt is living in Florida. She's a high school dropout. She's struggling to make ends meet. She's got a daughter with some health issues that she can't afford to help. And so she's looking for something, anything. And then one day at work, she works at a certain type of establishment. We'll just leave it at that. And that's where she meets the guy played by Chris Evans, who is a pharmaceutical rep. And he basically, almost on a whim, is like, you know what? You seem pretty good at reading people. Why don't you come talk to me and we'll talk about getting you a job. Turns out where he works is a pharmaceutical company called, I believe the name in the movie is like Xena. That's not the name of the actual company that it's based on, but you've got this, it's led by this brilliant chemist played by Andy Garcia, who has basically invented a faster acting, more easily delivered version of fentanyl.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this happened in like the early 2010s, so like 2011, 2012, like that's the time frame we're talking about. But this this company is struggling to get into the market. They're a small outfit, and the pharma giants sort of have everything on lockdown. And so they basically enlist Emily Blunt's character, among many others, to try to force their way into the market and break the stranglehold by the big outfits with a product that by all accounts, at least all the accounts that are being shared with them, is actually a better product for pain management, specifically the management of pain that comes with cancer treatment. Like, that's the specific sort of aim. It's not long before they start bending the rules, you know, venturing into gray areas in terms of both ethical, moral, legal, what have you, but they're all making just a bunch of money. And it is remarkable and not at all surprising how quickly things like morals and ethics can be sort of shunted aside somewhat when the, you know, when you get more zeros on those checks. But we watch as this company, you know, rockets to the top. Like, sales are huge. There's an IPO. But, you know, it's always a house of cards with stuff like this. And it's not long before the ramifications of what they're doing really start to rain down on all involved. Mm. It's a really good movie. And it's the timeliness of it. Because, again, like, we're talking now about the, you know, the opioid epidemic is ongoing. The potential for abuse of these drugs that began from a legitimate usage pain management standpoint, but we also get to see some of the shadier side of medical practitioners who, you know, they're, you know, when you're getting a kickback for every prescription that you write, right, well, you're going to write more of them. Yep. Like, if you're a certain type of person, and what these people did was target that sort of person. Mm. And so it's like, there's a lot of moral bankruptcy at work here, and even the people who sort of, like, wake up, like, it's still hard to sympathize because, again, what they have done is so reprehensible in so many ways. But, like I said, the cast is great. The performances are across the board excellent. Emily Blunt, like, she's great in everything.
Yeah.
This is a wonderful part for her. Chris Evans crushes it. At one point, after a particularly foul-mouthed rant that he went off on, Sheridan actually turned to me and she said, "It's weird hearing that come out of Captain America." You know, she's not wrong, but you know, good on him for you know, for spreading his wings. Mm. after extricating himself from the MCU. I mean, I assume he's out, but you know, maybe they keep pulling you back in.
Right,
it's hard to tell. But Andy Garcia is wonderful as the sort of the billionaire genius, like, company founder. Catherine O'Hara plays Emily Blunt's mom.
Wow.
Which is delightful. Mm-hmm. Like, the dynamic between the two of them is great. I mentioned Jay Duplass. He's one of the executives at the pharmaceutical company who is Jay Duplass does like when he goes full weasel, man, it's super good.
Yeah.
It's super good. And he does that here. But even, like, up and down the rest of the supporting cast, like, you just have just this collection of really talented people. A lot of faces that you'll recognize, and if you don't know their names, and you'll get just a really complex and compelling film. It's weird to call it entertaining because of the subject matter, but it really is. I mean, it's a really well-made movie, and no surprise, like, David Yates is a, you know, it's not his first rodeo, but to take this sort of story and to craft something that is both, you know, engaging and compelling, but also maintains a degree of its meaning, it's pretty impressive. Yeah. And you know, and good on the folks at Netflix for making it happen. I mean, granted, it'll disappear into the algorithm in 10 days or whatever, because that's just the world we live in now. But if you have an opportunity to check it out, and it ain't a feel good movie, so strap in. But if you're a fan of good storytelling and quality filmmaking, like, Pain Hustlers, man, solid stuff.
Excellent. Alan Adams talking movies with us on Pass the Popcorn. Full-size candy bar is tomorrow night?
You know it, man. Full-size for life.